Thank you for the invitation to address such a distinguished audience. My review will not be published for a few weeks yet. I'm very pleased and rather relieved to say that it left my computer around about 4:30 this afternoon. I was asked to undertake this review in July, and so it's been a six-month rather intensive study. And the methodology I elected to use was one of very iterative consultation. And I know there's many people in this room have provided me with their views and opinions and information and quite a lot of factual evidence, which has helped me bring forward this review, and I'd like to thank you all. And you can join several hundred and possibly over 1,000 people have contributed in some way to the review. The process, as I say, has been iterative and consultative, and therefore it's been a fairly open process. That means that there won't be too many surprises for those who have been following the review and participated in it. I feel fairly comfortable sharing with you some of the conclusions this evening. One of the problems facing me in this review was defining the scope. This was the challenge set to me in the white paper. It was a very welcome challenge, having spent all my professional career on the interface between university and business, whether it be in business or in a consultancy role or in an RDA, dare I say the words RDA, or as a vice chancellor leading a business facing university. It was a welcome challenge. The biggest problem early in the process was to define the boundaries of what I should be studying and what I shouldn't be studying, because this is an extremely diverse landscape of activity between universities and industry business. So my problems were, whereabouts do I draw these boundaries? And I unashamedly say that I drew the boundary as far as universities were concerned in saying it's the interface between universities and wealth-creating business. Now, as we all know, universities do an awful lot of work with the public sector and indeed with other sectors of our economy. But it's the interface with wealth-creating business is where I decided to draw the boundary. And equally, what is a university? Well, university definitions are fairly straightforward, but actually there's far more accredited institutions in this country than there are universities. So we expand it to accredited institutions, and that, of course, brings in the private sector higher education providers who are accredited, and it also brings in some of the FE colleges. This is an important factor, because if we draw the boundary simply around universities, we may well have unintended consequences of the recommendations that I have. Equally, whereabouts do we put the RTOs? Raised by David Nettleton, I think, is here this evening with me quite rightly. Not strictly within my scope, but nevertheless, recommendations that I make could well have impact upon the RTOs, and I need to be conscious of that position. So drawing the boundaries has been quite difficult. I'd like to talk this evening about five major areas. Landscape and domains. What I mean by landscape and domains in terms of the university business interface? Well, many of us, or many of you who have worked in particular domains on this landscape, I've talked to many research academics and research leaders, and equally many research people inside the business side who work together in their own domain, developing new technologies, innovating, creating wealth through that innovation. That's just one domain on this fantastically diverse, wide and expert landscape that we have. There's the landscape of the helping undergraduates form their first new business, encouraging entrepreneurship amongst our undergraduates, helping them develop enterprise skills, helping them develop employability skills. What's the role of enterprise centres, innovation centres on our campuses? These are different dimensions of that landscape. A landscape which helps companies upskill their workforce through work-based learning. Another example of university business collaboration. Examples of internships, of placements. These are all valuable domains within the context of a very broad landscape of university business interaction. And this diversity is a fundamental strength of our sector. Gone are the days when all universities wanted to be like the others. We're now very proud of the diversity of our universities. And if we want to have a world-leading university sector, then there's no point in having excellence in one part of that sector without excellence in different parts of the sector. And no one university can cover all domains within that landscape. It's simply impossible and indeed not desirable. Diversity amongst our universities in the context of their business collaborations is a strength. And we need to achieve excellence in each of those domains in order to have an excellent landscape. And that's a fundamental aspect of university business collaboration. But that brings into question a further point. Many people would argue that the strength of our university sector has been somewhat delivered through competition. Competition between universities to achieve resources, to build success, to build brands, to build reputations. And it is a highly, highly competitive sector. But if you think of it from another dimension, that competitive instinct between universities can also be a weakness. Because the needs of business must transcend the competitive nature of universities. When a business goes to a particular university and asks for a service that that university doesn't deliver, the answer, no, we don't do it, is simply not good enough. We have to establish a culture where there's no wrong door for business to approach universities, where universities are happy to divert those inquiries to other universities or other providers who can help that business. I've come across far too many examples where universities have been quoted as being the unresponsive university, not because they didn't respond, but simply because they didn't do what was required by the business and didn't refer the business to somewhere else. So this excellence in the university sector needs to be defined by the domains of that university business collaboration landscape, and we need to achieve excellence in every domain. And there is excellence. There is excellence in our sector in those domains. One of the weaknesses, I would say as an aside, is that quite often you're working in a particular domain and you find excellence in that domain, you find really enthusiastic, committed people in that domain who don't know anything about the other domains and quite often don't know they exist. That is, frankly, understandable in the context of achieving excellence because you need to be focused. But actually, it's not very helpful if we're trying to achieve a landscape that is excellent across the field. So diversity is a strength, and we need to start talking about collaborative advantage amongst universities rather than pure competitive advantage. There is a nice model about universities and supply chains. From my perspective, a university is an integral, strong part of the supply chain to UK business. It supplies high-level skills. It supplies innovative skills. It supplies research. It supplies enterprising entrepreneurial graduates and postgraduates. It's a nice model, the supply chain model, well understood by most people. But actually, that supply chain model, we must remember, is not a linear model. Strong supply chains are those with feedback loops, where there's an empathy between the supplier and the user, where there's a collaboration, a partnership, a joint ownership, an understanding, an empathy between the two. So I use the supply chain model quite freely, but we need to remember that good supply chains are not linear. It's not procurement and user. It's far more of a partnership than that. But we do need to strengthen those supply chains if we're going to achieve excellence across the field. It's all about people. It's all about people development. And it might be people development in the context of advanced technical skills. Students coming through UTCs, going to high-level apprenticeships, feeding the real need for high-level technical skills in our advanced technological industries. There's a supply chain there that we need to improve. There are blockages in that supply chain that needs to be removed. It might be a supply chain in the context of high-level skills from undergraduates. The situation regarding employment of undergraduates is well publicised. The need for work-integrated learning is well acknowledged. And yet, each year we see the number of students going out on placements, on placement years, declining. There are many reasons for that, at least many published reasons. I'm not sure I accept them, but there are many, many published reasons. Why don't I accept them? Well, if we look at the universities that are really active in terms of supplying sandwich programmes, and those that really achieve in terms of making sure their students are getting that full year placement experience as an integral part of their programme, we look at Surrey, at Bath, at Aston, at Loughborough, at Brunel. The former, I'm old enough to remember, the former Colleges of Advanced Technology. We also look at Bournemouth and Ulster. They have polytechnics in their genes. These are the universities that have really succeeded in getting a significant proportion of their students out on a placement. So those reasons why students go on placement, I think, are far more about university culture, university portfolio and mission than they are about the willingness of students to do this. But nevertheless, we have to address that problem, and there are some recommendations in my review on how we can address that problem. Because the evidence is strong and compelling that our undergraduates who go through that placement year are better equipped to contribute to their future employer far quicker than they would be if they didn't. But we're also seeing a growth in internships. More and more companies now are taking interns, not just because they want to have the intern inside the organisation, but as a fairly elongated interview for future employment. Many of our corporates are now doing this, and an internship is becoming an extremely valuable aspect of an undergraduate experience in the context of achieving that employment with the employer of choice. So internships are a new way of work-integrated learning. But we have more. There's more innovative solutions coming forward. If we look at the industry-sponsored degree programmes now, the KPMG, Durham, Exeter, Birmingham model is well known and well advertised. But actually, it's not new, is it? Southampton, Solent and the Merchant Navy have been doing it for years. So the idea that we must simply resolve to have a university degree programme independent of companies is actually not valid. It's not valid anymore. We will see more company-sponsored undergraduate degree programmes. Indeed, in the postgraduate market, research market, postgraduate market, we're seeing Rolls-Royce and Cranfield with their master's portfolios. We're seeing GlaxoSmithKline and Strathclyde with their PhDs. These are jointly sponsored programmes. This will grow. This will grow as companies become more and more engaged in ensuring that supply chain of high-level skills can be absorbed by their future workforce. These are things that we really need to encourage and to promote. But internships and placements shouldn't be just applied to undergraduate programmes. If we look at the number of our PhD students who go into the life of academe compared to those who would wish to go into the life of academe, it's fairly low. We've done an awful lot of work, and the Research Council has done an awful lot of work in improving the employability skills of our doctoral students. But the results are still not really what we should expect. So there'll be recommendations in my review about internships for PhD students. PhD students encouraged to go and work outside the university as an integral part of their programme. I'll also be applying that, incidentally, to postdoctoral employees. Postdocs, quite often on successive short-term contracts, need that exposure in the 21st century world of human resource investment. Surely we should be extending that opportunity to our postdocs also. It's all about people. A knowledge exchange is all about people also. I was very pleased when Asian's Review said that we would be investing in innovation vouchers, because I'd already written that inside my review, and it would have looked rather unfortunate if I'd recommended it and he hadn't. But I haven't removed it, because I thought of it first. Actually, I suspect I didn't, but that's not the point. Similarly, the growth of KTPs and mini-KTPs. Knowledge transfer partnerships are one of the established successes for over 30 years now. I'm old enough to remember they used to be called teaching company schemes when they first started. These are excellent ways of promoting innovation and sometimes research in the context, especially of SME growth. So there'll be points there about that knowledge exchange in the context of SME growth, universities working with businesses through a variety of tools to try and promote that innovation and growth in that sector. I think at this point, we really need to think about the facilitating of economic growth in a wider sense. Some of you will remember this. The late, great Ron Deering, someone from whom I learnt a great deal over many years. This was 2002. One of those quotes that will live for a long time. In a 21st century knowledge-based economy, surely this has got to be true. Universities are the engines of economic growth. They are the suppliers of the high-level skills. They are the suppliers of innovation. They are the suppliers of research. Perhaps one that some of you may not have seen. This is from the late President John F. Kennedy. He actually never delivered this speech. It was the one he was about to deliver. It's no coincidence, is it? The Cambridge phenomenon is well known, well recorded, well investigated, well publicised. I would argue perhaps we could and should have done more in that context. John F. Kennedy. Steve Jobs. This is from his biography, a quote from his biography. I'm sure most of you or many of you will have heard of Frederick Terman, Dean of Engineering at Stanford. 1951, he persuaded the university to establish a 700-acre industry park on part of the campus. That's now the Stanford Research Campus. 700 acres allocated simply to the spin-outs from that particular university. Now, the history of Stanford is also well known in terms of the investment that went into it from the US government over many, many years. But 700 acres next to that particular university which was receiving so much investment in research was a key point, and as Steve Jobs quite rightly says there, that was a real element in the development of that Stanford Research Park. So why am I going down this path? I'm going down this path because I believe we have an underutilized resource in our research universities. The facts are compelling. We have one of the best research profiles in the world. Our research intensive universities are amongst the best in the world. We have enormous research power in this country. Do we use it sufficiently in the context of economic growth? Do we exploit it? Do we work hard at obtaining further research from international companies into our universities? Yes, we can see a growth in international companies sponsoring research in our universities. Are we doing enough as a country to support those universities in attracting that growth, that investment? And once we've got that investment, are we doing enough to say to those companies that are investing in our research-intensive universities, how about the next stage of development, the next part of the chain? Where's the next investment going to come from? We welcome your investment in research and development in this particular university, but where is the next investment that's going to create jobs outside the university? Where's your R&D centre? Where's your production centre? Where's your design centre? Are we doing enough to build on this excellence that we have, this world-class capability that we have? Are we doing enough in the context of selling that to create more economic wealth in this country? I pose the question, I think I know the answer. In my introduction, it was said that I was the foundation chairman of a local enterprise partnership. I had to forego this when I took on this particular review. I served for 6 years as a director of an RDA, overseeing innovation and investment in the East of England. And actually, I'm very proud of what we achieved during those 6 years in terms of investing in high technology, high science-based facilities in the East of England. The local enterprise partnerships are fairly new. It's taken them time. It's taken them time to put themselves together. Some are doing extremely well. If you look at Warwickshire and Coventry, for example, looking at what they're doing, especially working with Warwick University and Coventry University in partnership, two excellent universities in their own rights, working in partnership and collaboration, complementing each other, not competing, but complementing each other in what they do. A local enterprise partnership, making a difference, working with two excellent universities, complementing each other, working together for local economic growth. It's a good exemplar for other local enterprise partnerships to follow. Local enterprise partnerships are the only game in town. We have to make them work. We have to make them successful. So in my review, I'll be recommending that local enterprise partnerships take a fairly significant role in the promotion of university business collaboration in the future. And that includes a role in the context of innovation vouchers working with TSB. It includes a role in the context of high-level skills training. It includes helping SMEs through apprenticeship schemes. It includes helping SMEs through internship schemes. The role of the local enterprise partnership is going to be critical in the future economic health of our country. We cannot do it all centrally. We have to let it go and respond to local needs. Of course, there's a balance. There's a balance in a hub-and-spoke model. But nevertheless, local enterprise partnerships are the only game in town, and we have to invest in them. Chairman, I'm conscious of the time. And one of the things that you learn when you retire from being a vice-chancellor, and I'm sure you'll remember this, is that you don't lose the wish and the enthusiasm for letting people know what you think. You just find it more difficult to find an audience. Thank you very much indeed for listening to me. Thank you.